guys heard about the robbery up at Quick and Easy this week? This is a joke, so it's not real. We have a dispatcher that goes to first service every Sunday, and her eyes got that big, like, well, what did I miss? But a guy was up there filling up his truck, and he called the police and said, somebody just robbed me of $100. And then the officer responding to the call said, well, do you have identification? Do you know who it was? And he said, yeah, pump six. How many of you have ever used a sextant? Does anybody know what a sextant is? Okay. The sextant is a navigational device that are used for those who are on the high seas. This device was invented in 1731. And it's still used today because sometimes GPS services on ships go down. And a sextant is a device to find coordinates and how far it is from one place to the next. And how this works is basically a tube, and there's different mirrors that you use, and it's got dials with degrees on them. And what you do at night to find your navigation so you don't go adrift from the direction you're wanting to go, you find the brightest star in the sky in the direction you're wanting to go. And once you hone in on that, you dial it down to where it brings that star through the mirror that you're looking through the lens down to your horizon just above the water. And then that points you in the direction you want to go. Depending on the degrees you turned it, the distance you have to go to get to where you want to go. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I think far too many people, obviously in our culture, but even amongst our churches, are going spiritually adrift. We've been talking about finding that true north, following Christ as accurately as we possibly can, and how Satan likes to pull us off like a magnetic field, just enough, just even one degree, to keep us from following Jesus, how Christ would want us to follow him. And here today in John chapter 8, Jesus gives us a spiritual sextant to focus on so that we can be drawn in the right direction. And here is what Jesus says in John chapter 8, verse 12. I am the light of the world. In other words, Jesus is saying, if you would focus your spiritual sextant on me, because I am the brightest light that shines, if you would focus that light on me, I will draw you in the right direction. And for Jesus to say this is a very big statement. Now, a few things about light. Light is a simple element, yet there's still a lot we don't know about it. Here's what we do know. Light's made up of particles that are always in a constant wave. It's never straight. And light is fast. Light is 50 times faster than a lightning bolt. And you've probably seen a lightning bolt pretty fast. It comes out of nowhere. But light is 50 times faster. Light travels at 186,000 miles per second, which means light will go around the earth 7 times in 1 second. And almost all the light that we know of comes from the sun. That is our greatest source of light. It is 100 times larger in diameter than the earth. But in volume, 1.3 million earths can fit inside of the sun. And the sun puts off so much energy every second, it's equivalent to 1 billion atom bombs exploding every second. And what does Jesus claim? In front of the religious leaders, he tells them, I am the light of the world. Now, the religious leaders, these rabbis, they didn't know the science. First century, they didn't know the stuff I just rattled off. But they knew one thing, and they knew that God is light. In fact, the very first thing ever created, God created light. The Jews believed God was light. John said there's no darkness in God. The Apostle Paul makes this statement, God lives in unapproachable light. And then Jesus comes up and says, I am the light of the world. What kind of statement is he trying to make about himself? I wonder if the thoughts rattling around in their brains, is he claiming that he is God? And there's going to be a debate that happens. This was a bitter pill for these rabbis to swallow. There's only one God. How could another man claim to be God? God created light in the beginning, the very first thing in creation. Then you go to the book of Exodus. You see, light's a really important theme in Scripture. Book number 2, the Exodus. God delivers his people from slavery out of Egypt. After they cross the Red Sea and God closes it and they've escaped the Egyptian army, what does God do to navigate his people in the wilderness? He gives them a pillar of cloud by day to follow. Wherever it went, they followed it. But what do you do at night? God provided a flame, a pillar of fire, light, to light their path, the direction he wanted them to go. Then book number 3, Leviticus. God wanted his presence to be with the people. So as they followed the cloud, as they followed the fire at night, when God wouldn't stop them, they would set up the tabernacle. And God's presence was there in the tabernacle, in the Holy of Holies, inside of a tent where it was dark, but God provided light. He said to set up what we call today a menorah. 7 candles representing the 7 days of creation. And so what's happening here? Book 1, creation, creating light. Number 2, creating a nation. Number 3, creating a residence for God. Then you go several hundred years later, the time of the prophets, where God's people, they were in an ebb and flow with their relationship with God. They would praise God, and they would kind of get methodical about it, and they'd see what other people groups around them were doing. They would be drawn to idol worship, and God would say, okay, have it if you want it. And they would be sometimes taken off as slaves and killed. And then Isaiah comes along, and he has something to say about the light. Isaiah prophesied a day will come when there will be a great light. That one day a great light will come into the world. Matthew, in the Gospels, picked up on this. This theme of light. And in Matthew 4, verse 16, the people living in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of the shadow of death, a light has dawned. And then about 30 years later, Jesus, standing before the Pharisees, says, I am the light of the world. And they knew the Old Testament. They understood the importance of light. And light always represents God. And now Jesus is saying, I am the light of the world. He's making it fully known. In John 18, verse 12, when Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. The Pharisees challenged him. Here you are appearing as your own witness. Your testimony is not valid. They don't want to believe it. They don't want to say it. They don't believe that's true. And so what they're calling him out on is something that happened 1.5 years prior. They had remembered what Jesus had said about himself in his testimony about who he was. In John 5, verse 31, if I testify about myself, my testimony is not true. There is another who testifies in my favor, and I know that his testimony about me is true. What he's saying there is God's going to make it known. Fast forward 1.5 years later, here in John chapter 8, in this debate where he says, I'm the light of the world, now he's coming out and stating it for a fact. And these guys don't like it one bit. Jesus no longer is going to hold back. There was a part of his life, his ministry, where he did things, but he didn't want anyone to say anything about it. He was waiting for the time to come for it to be revealed, and now it is. John chapter 8, Jesus is making the claim that I'm the light, and if you set your spiritual sextant on me as the light of the world, I and no one else will lead you to God. That's the claim that he is making. And if you follow me as the light of your world, you will never spiritually go adrift. And the Pharisees are not liking hearing this because they viewed their teaching as superior to Jesus' teaching. And he's going to point out, by following their teaching, they're going to lead you spiritually adrift. But if you set your sextant on my light, you'll never go adrift spiritually. And so the debate's getting ugly. They start to call Jesus crazy things. They call him crazy. They say that he's demon-possessed. Then they racially kind of throw a slur. Well, he's a Samaritan. And then Jesus, he has a response. He calls them liars. He even says that their daddy is the devil, the father of all lies. And that's going to go over like a hot dog on Hanukkah. That they're not liking this at all. But this is an important debate that Jesus now is ready to have by claiming he is the light of the world. In John 8, verse 31, to the Jews who had believed him, Jesus said, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. See, what had happened for centuries, the religious leaders oppressed the Jewish people and gave their teaching, which oftentimes was contradictory to God's word. And now Jesus came in fulfillment of the Old Testament to set people free from the strict religious rules that they had followed for centuries. And he says, if you truly follow me and believe I am the light of the world, I will set you free spiritually. And when you're spiritually adrift, often we will turn to all sorts of philosophy and teaching of this world. It's very tempting. But Jesus says, I'm the light of the world. Follow me and nothing else. And there's a lot of things that we suffer from in this life. We suffer from health conditions. We suffer in relationships. We suffer financially. What's the most important thing about us, about you? It's far greater than any of those things. It's where you are spiritually. And we struggle as a culture. There are a lot of people hurting spiritually who may not even realize it. They think it's X, Y, and Z, but it's all along. It's where you're at spiritually. That's where you have to start. That's the starting point, your relationship with Christ. And a lot of people are struggling and don't know what to do, but what we do know is Jesus is the light of the world, and that's what people need to set their sights on. 10 years ago, 1 in 5 Americans experienced at some point during a year some sort of mental health issue. It might be a day, it might be a week, it might be a month, but 1 in 5 people struggle with something. Maybe it's depression, uncontrolled anger, stress, anxiety, suicidal thoughts. The Kaiser Foundation studies this. That was 10 years ago, 1 in 5 people. Today, it's 1 in 2. It's 1 in 2 people struggle. And what's the cure for that? Because that's not okay. The cure for this is what is the light in your life? What is it you focus on? Because Jesus says he is the light of the world. And if you would set your spiritual sextant on him and bring him down to your horizon, he will give you the path that you need to take. The world needs the light of Jesus Christ. Remember about 6 years ago, we talked about essentials, things that were essential. Remember what happened 6 years ago? What's the most essential thing we can have? It's a relationship with Jesus Christ, because he's the one that will set the course for our lives. But often, two questions come up when making the decision to follow the light of the world, Jesus Christ. Number one, am I worthy? And number two, is he even able? I've spiritually drifted so far away, I'm not worth it. Or I've drifted so far off path, is he even able? Well, here's what Jesus says in John 8, verse 34. Jesus replied, very truly I tell you, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Now a slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. So if the son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. I want to say that last part again. So if the son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. What he's saying is, you're worth it. There's nothing you can do in your life to set yourself spiritually adrift so far that he can't bring you back. He is more than able. You are worthy. He is able. And so we go back to this debate. Abraham gets brought up. Chapter 8, verse 53, are you greater than our father Abraham? He died and so did the prophets. Who do you think you are? You know, they view Jesus, he's just a man. And as great as Abraham was, the father of our nation, who do you think you are? You want to claim to be God, you're not even greater than Abraham. How could you be God? The rabbis think this is a joke. And then in verse 56, your father Abraham rejoiced at the thought of seeing my day. He saw it and was glad. You're not 50 years old, they said to him, and you have seen Abraham? They just think Jesus is kind of fanatical. He's kind of off his rocker. And then Jesus has a mic drop moment. He responds in verse 58, "Very truly I tell you," Jesus answered, "before Abraham was born, I am." Now, if you don't know what I am is, you might be thinking, I am what? that's kind of empty. I am what? These religious leaders knew exactly what Jesus was referring to. That the word I am, it's the same word that is used for the name of God when Moses was before the burning bush. And when Moses said, "If I go to Pharaoh, who do I say sent me?" And God says, "I am." It's the Hebrew word Yahweh. And Jesus is saying, "I am God." He's saying it very plainly. He's not holding back any longer. And the religious leaders, they reach down and they pick up stones. And they're ready. They believe this is blasphemy against God, that he's claiming to be God. And they're ready to stone Jesus to death. And he just kind of slips off quietly. And so now, 2,000 years later, Jesus boldly has made the claim that he is God and he is the light of the world. The question now for you, he is the light of the world. Is he the light of your world? That's the real question here. There's no debate who Jesus says he is. But the question you have to wrestle with for yourself personally, is he the light of my world? You see, Jesus says three times in the gospel, twice in John, he is the light of the world. He says it in John 8, verse 12, again in John 9, verse 5. In between those chapters and verses, that little debate goes on with the religious leaders. Before this happens, Jesus has a confrontation with a woman. After John chapter 9, verse 5, he meets a man that's born blind. Before the confrontation happens, the Pharisees decide they want to trap Jesus. They intentionally create an affair where a woman's caught in adultery. They come dragging her out of the house, and they find Jesus, and they come to him and say, "This woman has committed adultery. You know what the law says. She should be stoned to death." There's a little bit of conversation back and forth, and Jesus finally says, "He who has committed no sin, throw the first stone." And one by one, the religious leaders drop the stones, and they turn, and they walk away. And I would imagine the woman was trembling in fear, and Jesus simply asked her to sin no more. And then after the second time he claims to be the light of the world, Jesus meets a man that's born blind, and the disciples pull him off the side, and they say, "Hey, is he born blind because of his parents' sin?" And Jesus said, "No, but it's to glorify God." And he spits on the ground. I remember the story in Sunday school. Makes some mud, he rubs it in the man's eyes, and he says, "Go to the pool and wash your eyes." And when he does and he opens them, he sees for the very first time. What's happening here? What do you notice about the interactions with Jesus with people? When he meets someone who needs help, he heals with power. And he confronts sin. What does he do? He uses compassion. And I think too often we get that mixed around. There's someone that comes to you who is in need. It could be monetarily, it could be physically. They just need someone to talk to, and our response often is thoughts and prayers. We don't spring to action to meet a need. It's just a thought and a prayer. And then we would have someone that you confront about a sin in their life, and we use power, and we point it out, and we're judgmental, and we make accusation. That's the opposite of what we see from Jesus. Here's the bottom line. Jesus is the light of the world, but he identifies another light of the world as well. It happened on the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, verse 14, where he says, "You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden." So if Jesus is the light of your world, what are you doing with it? What are you doing with your light? Those in need, do we treat them with power and compassion and reach out and actually do something with our light? With those who are drowning in sin, do we bring the light of compassion and kindness? so that they would be drawn to the light and drawn out of their sin. You know, we look at our world and we see that it's a mess. And when you have the mindset, somebody else better fix it. Government better fix it. Do you know what? We have the solution. The Christ follower has the solution. It's only determined if you decide he's the light of my life. And if he is, then we need to use that light. Too often we take a bushel and we cover that light. Remember the song, "This Little Light of Mine"? And we don't shine that light to the world, but we feel warm and toasty and good about ourselves. But we're called to uncover that light and shine it for the world. Bring the light of Jesus to this world. So, this morning, would you take up the challenge to set your spiritual sextant on the light of the world, that being Jesus Christ? Draw that down to the horizon of your life so he would be the light that you follow, and only him. And then once you start following him, will you allow the light that shines in you to shine into other people's lives? We live in a dark world. We live in a culture far from Christ. But would you use your light? Would you consider your light helping and saving one person be worth it? I would agree that that would be worth it. But as you leave this morning, I pray that you would acknowledge Jesus as the light of the world, but is he the light of your world? Worship team's going to lead us in song. Let's stand together and let's worship.